The Book Nook on WYSO is presented by the Greene County Public Library with additional support from Clark County Public Library, Dayton Metro Library, Washington Centerville Public Library, and Wright Memorial Public Library.
Hello, welcome to the Book Nook on WYSO. I'm Vic McCunis. It's my pleasure to welcome to the program today S.A. Cosby. He's got a new novel out. It's called Razorblade Tears. He joins us on the telephone. Where are you, S.A.? Virginia?
Yeah, I'm calling from southeastern Virginia.
All right. Well, welcome to the program.
Oh, thank you for having me. I truly appreciate it.
And this is the official publication date as we are recording this interview for your novel, Razorblade Tears. And wow.
Yeah, today's the day. It's out in the wild.
What a story. How did you come up with this idea?
I had a friend who had experienced some of the issues that are discussed in the book. And as he and I discussed his personal situation, it sparked an idea in my mind. And I wanted to sort of examine the situation through the prism of storytelling and through a crime story set in the place that I love, the South.
Mm. And some of this takes place in an urban setting in Richmond, but a lot of it takes place in the countryside. And the other day I had Chris Offit on the program, and we were talking about writers that he admires. And he mentioned you, and he said one thing he really likes about what you're doing is that you're writing about people who live out in these rural areas, people that don't get talked about much in this genre.
Yeah, it's my honor to talk about that. I grew up in rural southeastern Virginia. A lot of the characters in my books are inspired by or amalgamations of people that I grew up with. And their stories are, you know, both vast and incredibly interesting. I mean, there's a multitude of inspirations that can be found in small town, rural Virginia, North Carolina, the South Carolina triangle, so to speak. And I think there are stories that are hinted at in other works, but it's my honor as a citizen of that area to sort of extrapolate those stories and hopefully bring people into our world in a way that's both exciting and interesting.
S.A. Cosby joins us. Tell us about your world, about your background, where you came from, and how you got to where you are right now.
Okay, yeah, I'll give you the Cliff Notes version. I was born, like I said, in southeastern Virginia. My mother and father separated when I was young, at an early age, and so we moved in with my grandparents. And so my mother struggled a bit. You know, we experienced poverty growing up, but through all the poverty and trials and tribulations, we had the love of education and reading. My grandmother was a reader. She read romance novels. My uncle read detective novels, and my mom was a huge fan of folklore and biographies. So I had quite an interesting literary education. Eventually, that translated into me wanting to tell my own stories. But it was a pretty long and circuitous route to getting published. I went to college, dropped out, worked a number of different jobs, moved around the country a little bit. But in all of that, I continued writing. And then about 7 or 8 years ago, I finally settled on crime fiction as my genre of choice. And once I kind of made that decision, things really seemed to take off.
I understand you kind of got your first big break when you had a story recognized at BoucherCon. Is that right?
Yeah. So what happened was my very first crime novel was published by a small independent publisher called Intrigue Publishing. And I was at BoucherCon talking about that book as a fan. I wasn't, you know, an author of note or anything. I was just a fan. And my conversation drew the attention of an agent, a gentleman named Josh Gessler. And he really liked what I was saying and what I was talking about. He took me on as a client. And the next book that we were able to produce was Black Tie Wasteland. And then Black Tie Wasteland got picked up by Flatiron, which offered us a 2-book deal, which Razorblade is the second part of that deal. And it just blew up. It just took off beyond my wildest dreams. The books are a crime novel, so there's violence. There's a lot of moral resignation and indecision with characters. And so to avoid my friends and neighbors at my local grocery store from looking at me funny, I just made up a hometown. But I love Virginia, and I love writing about the characters and the people here. And, that came out in paperback in June. It was actually Barnes & Noble's featured book of the month, and it was great. Just incredible seeing my name on a table at the front of the bookstore, a bookstore that I've gone on into years ago, just as a fan, as a reader, because I'm a voracious reader too. So again, it's just been an incredible experience.
I need to track that one down. It's Blacktop Wasteland. And right now, Razorblade Tears, just out in the world. I've been joined by the author, S.A. Cosby, on the telephone in Virginia. Okay, set it up for us without giving anything away. We've got some great characters in this story, man. I'm telling you, you have a great sense of humor. I love your dialogue. I love these two guys. Tell us about this story.
Yeah, so I'll give you the elevator pitch, as they call it. So basically, Razorblade Tears is a story of two fathers, one black, one white, both ex-cons, whose gay sons are married, and unfortunately, at the beginning of the book, these sons are killed. And these fathers decide to investigate the murders when they find out that the police are at a standstill with the crime, with the investigation. And through investigating, they are hoping to get revenge for the children, but also seek redemption for themselves, because neither man accepted their sons for who they really were. And that created a chasm between them. And so these men, these men of violence, these hard scrabble individuals, learn to grow and change and do the hard work of finding redemption, not just by like words, but by deeds. And so that sounds, it is a lot of heavy themes, but it's also a crime novel. These characters hopefully are engaging. And they, I hope, are able to reach people in a way that they'll find something they can identify with them. And again, because it's a crime novel, and I'm a Southern writer at heart. There's a lot of action. There's a lot of, like you said, a lot of dialogue, a lot of homilies and witticisms that I've heard sitting at the knee of my aunts and uncles and grandfather and grandmother. And so hopefully that makes for a really invigorating experience for people. They both have unique perspectives on the justice system and what it means them both individually and as members of a larger community. And so that was something I wanted to touch on as well. But the main theme of the book, I think, is just grief and redemption. And I hope that people take from it. The main thing I want people to take from it, I hope, is that don't wait too late to you know, mend broken bridges. You know, tomorrow is not promised. And so, you know, at the end of the day, you know, love is love. And don't let something as trivial as who someone loves keep you from having a full relationship with a family member or friend.
The book is Razorblade Tears. S.A. Cosby wrote it. He joins us on the program today. Both of these guys have done really bad things, and they're both now out. And one of them, our guy, Buddy Lee, he's living in his trailer, and he doesn't seem to really be doing much with himself. He doesn't really seem to be thriving, whereas our other guy, Ike, he has really done something with himself. He's a successful businessman. He's worked hard. So when these two guys get together, they're kind of like oil and water, aren't they?
Yeah, they're definitely from two different worlds, not just for their racial background, but for their viewpoints, the way they view the world. You know, Buddy Lee is someone who feels like maybe the world has done him wrong, and he's maybe not acknowledging how much he played a part in his current situation, where Ike is the exact opposite. He's so strident, almost to be stoic, and that, you know, he's succeeding almost out of spite to prove everyone wrong. And so, you know, these very, they're on opposite ends of the emotional spectrum, so to speak. But what unites them, what binds them, is not only their regret, but the love they have for their sons. And as they go on this path of vengeance, they find they have more in common than they would ever imagine. And I think for me, again, it was sort of trying to create a dialogue about common ground, about viewing it, just seeing other people's points of view and really embracing empathy. I think, you know, if there's one thing I think we need more of, not just in this country, but in, you know, the world as a whole, is empathy and seeing things from another person's perspective in a way that is not both human and not condescending. And so I tried very hard to do that with Ike and Buddy Lee. Often they're my mouthpieces for discussing issues that I think need to be talked about.
When you flip open Razorblade Tears and look at the inside flap in the front, it just says, S.A. Cosby reinvents the American crime novel. Wow. Walter Mosley. Is he kind of a mentor to you?
Yeah. He's someone that I admired for so many years. And then as the run-up to when my first book with Flatiron was published, he really, you know, extended me a kindness by reaching out to me and giving me, you know, great blurbs, but also, you know, just being someone I could talk to, you know, being someone that I could, you know, look toward as like a mentor, somebody to give me some guidance. You know, Walter is a part of a group of writers that was founded by Kelly Garrett and Gigi Padian called the Crime Writers of Color. And it's a very informal online group of writers from different ethnic backgrounds. And so that group, you know, at large, and Walter and Kelly and Gigi specifically, have really been mentors to me. And, you know, when you talk about the Mount Rushmore of crime writing, for me, it's Elmore Leonard, Dennis Lane, and Walter Mosley. And two out of those three have given me blurbs for my book. It doesn't get any better than that.
Mm. My guest is S.A. Cosby. His book is Razorblade Tears. And this story, there's so many twists and turns in it. And you've got some great villains. Can we talk at all about this biker gang? I mean, it's not a spoiler to talk about them, is it?
Yeah, no. I am a huge fan of any type of outlaw culture. I love people who live on the margins of society, not out of a condescending point of view, but I'm just fascinated with people who make certain decisions to land where they land. Now, with this biker gang, one thing that they do is they give me an opportunity to talk about certain attitudes that are not enlightened. They're the flip the other side of the coin of Ike and Buddy Lee. And so, and they're also, you know, I think your protagonist is only as good as your villain in any story. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, for me, the best villains are the ones that have the ability to win. Nobody wants to see your protagonist go against somebody who's a pushover. And so I did my best to create villains who are unlikable, driven, and just as forthright and tough as my protagonist, so we can create a good sense of suspense. And, you know, being a crime novel, they make good targets for Ike and Buddy Lee's rage.
Yeah, they alternate, the two of them, between feeling all this rage and feeling this tremendous guilt about their failures to accept the sexual preferences of their sons, whose deaths they're now trying to avenge. And these are terribly brutal deaths. They are so angry. They are so full of rage. They would do anything to avenge them.
Yeah, I think the thing that I tried to articulate is that soul-searing pain. And, you know, in all honesty, if Ike and Buddy Lee were honest with themselves, they would say a lot of their anger is born out of their regret. And so they're rightly angry and rightly devastated that their sons have been killed. But what fuels that engine of their vengeance is a healthy dose of regret. And even having said that, there are moments where I tried to give them time to bring it down and really contemplate what they're doing and what it means. Not only the physical act of trying to get revenge or avenge their sons, but the choices that they're making and how that you know, affects their psyche and their souls. And so I'm a firm believer in fiction that violence has to have consequences. I believe that you can write a book as violent and as brutal as you want, as long as your story earns that right. And by what I mean by earning that right is you have to tell a story that's compelling about characters that are growing and changing. And I want to see the journey. And, you know, and so that violence that happens in Raised by Tears, it definitely has consequences. You know, the things that they're doing, Ike and Buddy Lee, they're not doing in a vacuum. I think that's a mistake sometimes a lot of crime novels make, is that you have characters doing incredibly, you know, grandiose things or incredibly brutal things, and it seems like nobody notices. And so I definitely wanted to make it apparent that these actions are definitely changing the atmosphere and having consequences.
You mentioned earlier that your uncle liked reading crime novels. Did you pick some of those up when he was finished and scan them? Who were some of the writers he was reading?
Oh, yeah. He would let me have them. Like, and so, I mean, I had a early education of the great, you know, crime novelists of the 20th century. So, you know, he was a fan of Chandler and McDonald, both Ross and John Dee. Big Mickey Spillane fan. So I read a lot of Mike Hammer paperback, dime store paperbacks. But he also had, he also infected my taste because he loved a good Agatha Christie. You know, he was a big fan of a good Hercule Poirot novel. And so I read some of those. And so that really whetted my appetite at an early age for crime and mystery fiction. But like I said, I was a voracious reader. And so you throw in, you know, those authors, and then some Stephen King and some Richard Matheson, and all of the stuff that maybe your librarian didn't want you to read. I was always looking for that. So that was a great influence on me as a kid.
When I was reading Razor Blade Tears, I was flashing a little bit on some of the Robichaux books by James Lee Burke, and just the interactions between Cleet and Dave, and the fact that both of them, one of them's trying not to drink and the other one's drinking way too much, and your characters, they got a little fondness for the sauce too.
Yeah, and I wanted to show again that they're men of a certain age. You know, I think they make mention of it in the book a few times. They're not, you know, young men. They're not young bucks, and so their aches and pains, both metaphorically and physically, take a little longer to heal. And I think I'm, you know, that's probably me speaking a little bit also through the book. I'm, you know, I'll be 48 on my next birthday, and I definitely am not you know, as somebody, one of my friends said, I remember the days before I had a good and bad knee. And so, I definitely wanted to use that. But also I think, you know, again, growing up where I grew up, you did see people use alcohol to assuage their guilt or soften their mood. You know, with Ike, it's more of, you know, a drink after work to kind of take the edge off. For Buddy Lee, you know, he's somewhat crawled inside a bottle. And again, that's an exam. I think that's it shows how they both view the world and how they view their lives. And so, I definitely was influenced. Again, I wear my influences. I make no bones about it. The Robichaux books, you know, I'm a huge fan of the Jill Pike and Elvis Cole series of Robert Craig. So I definitely, you know, and I'm a huge fan of, you know, the Spencer books with Spencer and Hawk. And so, yeah, those influences are definitely seen and intentional in the book. I think those writers, I think they did more for advancing dialogue-driven narratives than anybody gives them credit for.
Well, I loved it. You mentioned Burke and Bob Craze. James Lee Burke has made 19 appearances on the show, and Bob Craze has made 15, and they're number one and number two in history on this program. So you love the same stuff I do.
Yeah, I'm a huge fan of both of those guys. Robert Craze, the Elvis Cole books, I don't know if it's possible, but they seem underrated to me. I love those books. And the interactions between Cole and Pike are just, they're funny, they're serious, they're searing, all in the same paragraph. It's just amazing.
Back in 2007, I was at the Book Expo conference in Los Angeles, and Bob had a new book out, and he drove me across town in his SUV, and as we're driving along, he points somewhere, and he goes, he says, that place over there? He says, that's a really good place to hide a body.
I think that's something that writers do. If I'm traveling and I come out of an airport and I'm driving through a town. I was in Dallas in 2019 before the pandemic, and as we're driving from the airport and I'm just riding down the road, and I'm looking like, man, you could chop a body up and hide it in all these different dumpsters. Nobody would notice it there. And so it's like you're always writing, you're always plotting. I don't know if it makes you a morbid dinner guest, but I think it's something writers do almost as a matter of course.
Well, you have such a good ear for the way people speak. And one of the real highlights for me in this story, it's just the interplay, the exchanges between your two main guys, the dads, and then some of the peripheral characters. Like, I love this lady that's the neighbor in the trailer park, and she talks to Buddy Lee. What's her name? Margo? I love the way
Margo, yeah.
Yeah, she's got a mouth on her.
You know, it's funny. As a writer, I wanted to give Buddy Lee I wanted to give the impression of a life he could have had if he had made different choices. Mm-hmm. I think anybody reads the book, it's obvious that Margo likes Buddy and Buddy likes Margo, but they're also both very damaged people in a damaged point in their lives. But she's the person that worries about him and fusses over him. And, you know, again, here's this man, this broken, damaged man who's out in the middle of the night doing these horrific acts of vengeance and violence. And yet here's this person, his neighbor, who really worries about him and cares about him and can see the good man that he could be past all his flaws. And so, yeah, characters like Margo or Ike's wife, Maya, or just some of the, like you said, the more periphery characters. I love language. I love listening to people talk. That's the one thing I missed the most about the pandemic was going to a bar or a restaurant, not eavesdropping for content, but listening to the rhythm of conversation, listening to the way people cut each other off, listening to the pregnant pauses that exist in dialogue. Because for me, that's the best. When I see that in a story, that's when I'm really enjoying a book or a short story. And so I definitely try to replicate that in my work.
When you hear somebody say something particularly expressive or ear-catching, do you pull out your little notebook and scribble it down?
I used to just write it down in a little notebook, but now I'm able to put it, the wonders of modern technology. I can pull up my Google Doc. I have a Google Doc and all it is it's called eavesdropping. And so it's like, oh, I got to use that in the book. And so I'll type it in and put it in. And a lot of that does make its way into my work, definitely.
I was in the grocery store the other day and I saw this guy looking at the steaks and he's on his cell phone and he's telling somebody, two of us could eat on it. And I thought, wow, yeah, I never heard that expression. I liked it.
I was in a store the other day, and I heard a lady, she was on the phone, and she was talking to a friend of hers. And she said, yeah, I mean, I could go along with it, but I hate myself in the morning, and I wouldn't like myself very much at night either. And just stuff like that just sticks with me. I love that.
I do, too. My guest is S.A. Cosby. You're listening to The Book Nook on WYSO, making radio with the community and for the community. His new book, Razorblade Tears, just out. We were chatting before we went on the air, and you mentioned 5 years ago you're working in a hardware store. Did I hear a rumor that you work at a funeral home?
Yeah, my current job, I work, I'm a part of the staff of a funeral home. Be honest, though, I'm not doing as much as I used to there because the books have really just taken off. But I've had a lot of different jobs. I've been a bouncer. I've been a retail manager, a construction worker. I was a first mate on a charter boat. I've worked landscaping. I've picked apples and oranges. I've done a lot. There was one period of time in the mid-90s after I dropped out of college, I was replicating my whole the Jack Kerouac thing. So I hitchhiked from Virginia to New Mexico. And so I've definitely had a lot of different jobs at a lot of different positions at those jobs. And so, again, that works its way into my writing because I don't think I'll ever write a book. I love reading about books of rarefied society. You know, I love reading a book about, I love reading a book like John Le Carré's The Night Manager, and about, you know, the machinations of politicians in Zurich. But I won't ever write that, because I don't think I have a voice in that world or a handle on that, on that type of mindset. And so, yeah, my books are populated with people that I met through the course of my life in my family and my community, and like I said, in my different areas of employment. And like as you said previously, a lot of times the stories aren't being told, and it's, again, my honor to try to give those stories a little bit of life.
Now, when I was younger and more foolish, I used to hitchhike cross country, and man, some of those experiences are pretty freaky.
Oh yeah, it's definitely made. There are many times where I felt I've made a terrible mistake.
Right. Right. Exactly.
But I wouldn't trade those experiences for anything.
Yeah, here we are. Somehow we survived. So,
my mama used to say, God looks out for fools and animals, and I've been both of them.
That's a good one. What are you working on? You working on anything?
Yeah, I'm currently working on my next book for Flatiron, tentatively titled All the Sinners Bleed. And I'll give you the elevator pitch for that. It's about the first black sheriff in a small southern town in 2017. And on the one-year anniversary of his election, there's a shooting at the local high school, and a beloved high school teacher is killed. The assailant is also killed in what may or may not be a good shoot by the sheriff's deputies. And once the smoke clears, the sheriff discovers that the school teacher, his assailant, and a mystery third person were involved in a series of murders. And so he has to investigate this serial killing spree that's centered in his town, while at the same time dealing with an upcoming parade by far-right extremists to protect the numerous Confederate statues in his town. And so he has both of these two things happening at the same time, while also dealing with his own personal life with a father and brother that are a little bit estranged, and him trying to bring them back together, and some secrets from his past. There's a secret as to why he came back home to his hometown and ran for sheriff. And so, like I said, tentatively titled All the Sinners Bleed. I like to describe it as True Detective Season 1 meets Justified. So.
Oh, okay. I'll watch out for that. And it sounds like that two-book deal turned into something else, so congratulations.
Yeah. Again, I just, you know, every day that I wake up and I see my name in a newspaper, I see my name being mentioned by people that I grew up admiring, I just realize just how, you know, how lucky I am. And luck, I think, is, you know, it's inspiration meets preparation. You know, a friend of mine once said, there's a friend of mine named Gabino Iglesias. He's a writer.
Mm-hmm.
He said, you know, you'll never get rejected if you never finish the book.
Mm.
And, you know, and that just sticks with me. You know, I got rejected a lot. My first book, My Darkest Prayer, was rejected by over 60 publishers.
Hmm.
And I've had many stories, short stories rejected. And I just, you know, I was just a little too stubborn to give up. And that was my journey. That's what I wanted to do. I'm not telling anybody they shouldn't give up if they feel they can't do it. That's a personal decision. But for me, I just never felt there was anything else I was really good at except writing. You know, all those jobs that I mentioned, I really wasn't that great at most of them. But writing is the one thing that it makes me feel like this is my purpose. And so just the fact that people are engaging with me and are engaging with the writing is a dream come true.
Well, it's really been a pleasure to talk to you about your book. Thank you so much for your time.
And thank you as well. Thank you for having me. It's been a pleasure.
My guest has been S.A. Cosby. His new one, don't miss it. It's called Razorblade Tears for the Book Nook. I'm Vic McCunis.